you know, silver and gold coinage would be an extremely useful thing to have in my direct personal physical control. So that's a simple thing to do. And guess what? If nothing happens, you still have the gold and the silver. You could still use it afterwards. So it's very different from changing your entire life and becoming a hermit in the woods, from taking a few simple precautionary steps. I'm sure it's not news to your audience. You know, a simple way of thinking of bullion is it's insurance.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to, watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Hey, we're just about at the, we are at the last week of January of the new year, man. Like, it seems like it just came, and here we are, we're already into February. Lomo Tigre is with us now, and a good friend of the show. His site is independentspeculator.com. Highly recommend it to you. If you got a question or comment for me or Lomo, shoot me an email. Lomo, we're talking about what's happening for 2024, and it seems to me his themes are war, AI, and hard assets. You think that kind of sums up what we're in for?
I think that's an excellent summary. The first and last are probably, you know, fairly obvious to our audience, but we need to go there. The middle one is the one that gets all the headlines, AI. But I think there's a tendency amongst particularly, you know, hard money types, people into gold and mining stocks and other, you know, the real world, to maybe dismiss this or think this is something for the future or something for other people. But I actually think the AI trend is something every investor needs to think about, if not worry about, if not every human being. And I'm not sure exactly where you want to go with this, but I think the main thing for people to really understand is, as new as this is, you know, we just had ChatGPT. Okay, in some ways it's not new, but this more enabled software, ChatGPT, exploded on the scene just last year. So it seems like, oh, well, this is this new thing. And we tend to dismiss new things as, oh, well, some years in the future, this may change things. But people need to understand that even though that was just a beta, that, you know, that raw product got tens of thousands of people fired last year because it immediately was able to take on tasks that, you know, white collar jobs that are just no longer needed. I think, was it British Telecom or some large company here, or quasi-statal company in the UK, like fired the whole department because they could replace it with AI. And that's just the beta version. As the various developers, you know, this isn't, again, the future, or this isn't one of those Rick Rule things, inevitable or imminent. This is happening now. Developers are writing apps to fine-tune this thing to your business, your need. You know, you're a doctor, or you're a, I don't know, you're a freight forwarder, whatever it is. There's somebody out there working on an app to adapt this to your needs and make it even more powerful. So I'm not here to cry gloom and doom. I actually think this will ultimately be extremely creative. In the same way, the internet itself unleashed a great deal of human creativity. You know, musicians didn't need to get a contract with one of just a couple record companies to go anywhere. Musicians could go directly to the entire world and catch on if they had the right stuff, right? I see this as a very creative process. But as you know, as an Austrian-influenced economic thinker, it's creative destruction, right? We're going to get the job destruction before we get the new job creation as these, you know, bots roll out. And by the way, I'm sorry if I'm going to seem like I'm raining on the parade here. That's sort of my shtick. But, you know, blue-collar jobs are not going to be exempt. We just saw headlines this week about BMW putting robots in their plants. So it's not just Elon Musk trying to show off. It's becoming sort of an everybody thing. I mean, I don't think it's long before you go into McDonald's and the only people in there are customers and maybe a manager in the back to come out every once in a while if the burger flipping bot gets stuck or something. But the point, though, is...
It'll be the burger maker. That's flipping.
This is happening now. This started last year, immediately changing the employment scenario. It's going to accelerate this year. And people talk about, oh, disruptive. We have a disruptive technology. Like, that's a good thing. Like, okay, maybe ultimately disruption is a good thing. But in the near term, disruption is something, at the very least, investors need to look at what they're in and what might be disrupted.
Hey, just to add a couple of things to that. So once upon a time, we had legions, armies of information operators where you call 411 to get a number, and that's gone. Internet got rid of that. And we had operators. You'd call, remember you call an operator and make a collect call? Or you would call an operator to, you know, place a call. I mean, you know, we don't have those people anymore. And somehow we survived. I think they've all got replaced by clerks in cell phone stores, right? Selling you cell phones.
Well, more positively, small businesses carry. I remember in the 90s, I worked in a small think tank. And it was the president, you know, the talking head. And it was me raising the money and running the operation. It was just like two guys and a secretary. And we ran events and operations and publications. That little office of three people did the same thing that a building, like literally a building full of people, it would have taken 50 or 100 years before. So that was, you know, the last revolution. But that business created value where there was none before. Like it was a small Utah-focused think tank, and it just wouldn't have existed. It's not like we took those hundreds of jobs and got rid of them. It's those jobs wouldn't have existed because nobody would have done what we did on that scale. So it created something that didn't exist before, this small local business of a type that was uneconomic. So I'm very bullish on this technology actually going forward. And we don't need to get too philosophical about, you know, general artificial intelligence and whether we're headed for, you know, what is it, Cyberdyne and the Terminator? You know, that's another conversation. So this technology on the table now, I think it's going to be a net positive, but I think the dislocation beforehand needs thinking about. And by the way, in the U.S., it's an election year. So if people start finding that they've been replaced by a robot in an election year, you know, guess who they're going to take it out on? The incumbent.
The big guy who gets 10% of everything in the country, everything we make in the United States. The big guy, right? So...
Right or wrong, that's the way voters go. You know, it's you know, it's the guy in the White House. Everything's his fault or her fault.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, remember the sign on Harry Truman's desk? The buck stops here. It still stops there, although they would prefer it didn't. They'd rather pass it on to someone else, but there is no one else to pass it on to. Hey,
maybe it stops there if he's awake, but never mind.
Well, that's another story. If he's actually alive anymore, then we could have a debate about that. But hey, my own personal experience with AI, one of the jobs I really hated doing the most was writing show notes to my numerous interviews. And, you know, some weeks it could be 15, 20 interviews, not so much anymore, but in the early days. And I actually hired a person to do it. And then I found AI tools that plugins for Zoom and, you know, cost me $120 a year for that plugin, a fraction of what I was paying my person to do it. And the notes, I wouldn't say they're like super high quality, but they're 90% of the way there. And then I feed it into ChatGPT. It writes a headline for me that I'll take or leave. And then it'll write a description for YouTube. I mean, a very basic, simple thing. The person was just a gig worker, basically, part-timer, 10, 12 hours a week. But, you know, her services are no longer needed. And that's just one tiny example. You know, I see it all over. I was watching a thing where the AI was actually having a conversation with somebody on the phone, like they were customer service from Tesla, and they had called this guy up to find out because he'd expressed an interest in buying a Tesla, and they wanted to find out, you know, if he was a good candidate or not because he didn't put the order through. And it had a two-way conversation that you could not tell Lobo was AI. That was the shocking part. The guy did not know he was talking to a bot.
Yeah, no, it's actually, again, I try to keep my my comments focused on the investment implications in the world, but it is quite interesting. And let me put just a simple idea out there. I think the Turing test is flawed. It's not the definition of intelligence. The ability of a computer to fool a person into thinking that it's a person for X amount of time, that doesn't make the computer a person. You know, I just think that was, it was an interesting idea at the time in the 1940s, right? You know, that made sense. Like if any machine that could do that, well, wow, it'd be like a person. But, you know, the reality is now we can see it. In fact, right? You can see, you talk to these things long enough and you start seeing the repetitions of the, you know, the formulaic approaches and you twig, if you're paying attention, that it's not a person. But that doesn't make that software in a box a person with legal rights. So there's a lot of, or at least last year, there was a lot of wool gathering about this. Oh, is ChatGPT alive? Does it have human rights? Do we have a right to edit it? Right? No, it's just software. It's not alive. You know, it's a long way from that. It's an expert system. It's not an artificial person at this point. But I want to circle back to something you started with, Carrie, in that the wars, because this is something else that makes for lots of headlines. And I'm not trying to diminish the human tragedies we're seeing around the world. You know, these are serious things. That the war is war. War is bad. War is hell, as the saying goes. I'm not diminishing that at all.
Yeah.
But it's also the sort of thing that makes for exciting headlines that can prompt people to make decisions that may or may not be justified by the facts. And I'm remembering back in my college days when we talked about mutual assured destruction with the Soviet Union.
Mad.
MAD policy. And I thought that was very appropriate. It's mad. Like, how can you have a policy that assures destruction? That's the only thing that's certain is destruction. Like, this is crazy, literally crazy. And they even call it that. And so I was very against the mutually assured destruction policy. And yet, in hindsight, looking back on it with my long white beard now, I have to say it worked, right? It's not that the Soviets didn't start World War III out of the kindness and goodness of their hearts. I mean, ideologically, they were supposed to take over the world. The revolution of the proletariat was supposed to take over the entire world.
Correct.
If that's the agenda and you don't do it, you don't just do it because you got out on the right side of the bet. Right? They were deterred. So the relevance today, what I'm trying to bring forward to the context now for your audience, is there's really scary stuff happening. And any one of these things can be World War III. You know, what's happening with Israel and Hamas, if it expands, that could absolutely turn the Middle East into the crucible of World War III. What's happening with Russia and Ukraine, you know, I'm not the only one saying this. It was obvious from the beginning. You have a nuclear power engaging in a hot war on the borders of Europe. Of course, that's fraught with risk that it could blow up in a much bigger way, like literally blow up in a much bigger way. So I'm not dismissing those, but remember the MAD policy and that it worked. You know, you can impute whatever negative, evil, vile motivations to Putin that you want. And yeah, I think he'd like to be czar of the world. I think he'd like to recreate the glory of the Soviet Union and put himself on top for life. Sure, I'm willing to believe that. But remember that mutually assured destruction worked last time. Then the missiles are still there, right? And so where I'm going with this is, as for all the saber rattling and posturing, nobody really wants World War III. I think everybody, no matter how power hungry you might be, you know, describe people however you want, nobody wants to die in a nuclear conflagration. And, you know, a scorched earth policy, if you're a megalomaniac, that's losing. You don't win anything. You know, maybe a truly insane person like in a James Bond movie who wants to destroy everything. But I don't think that's what we're looking at with Putin. I don't think that's what we're looking at with Hamas. I don't think that's what we're looking at with Xi in China either. None of the organizations involved in any of the conflicts or potential conflicts in the world today want to reduce the world to ashes. So I'm not saying ignore the headlines. I'm not saying that these wars are not dangerous and worth keeping an eye on. I am saying don't let yourself be stampeded by some of my esteemed peers who want to sell newsletters with exciting headlines. You know, don't mortgage your children's future to build a bunker in the woods in Idaho or something. You know, if you wanted a holiday retreat in the woods in Idaho, fine. But, you know, don't let yourself get stampeded. Apply a little emotional intelligence here. And it's important to apply it the most to sources you agree with, right? If you disagree with somebody, you know, the political opposites are saying something, it's easy to filter the noise and the nonsense. But when there's sources that you like or trust, or they're saying things that you want to hear, those are the ones you most carefully need to, you know, take a breath, look at this thing rationally. So investment implications of the various wars in the world are, I think, actually quite simple. Mm-hmm. Do I want to run off to a bunker in Idaho? No, not yet. Do I want to hold bullion? Absolutely. And by the way, silver fans who get mad at me and call me Dar Silver, do I want to own silver? Yes, I want to stack silver as well. Because if things actually did get really bad, you know, silver and gold coinage would be an extremely useful thing to have in my direct personal physical control. So that's a simple thing to do. And guess what? If nothing happens, you still have the gold and the silver. You could still use it afterwards. So it's very different from changing your entire life and becoming a hermit in the woods, from taking a few simple precautionary steps. I'm sure it's not news to your audience. You know, a simple way of thinking of bullion is it's insurance. And instead of whining or complaining because it hasn't gone to $10,000 or whatever, gold that is, you know, be glad that we don't live in a world that it's gone to $10,000, right? It's still good to have insurance and be able to sleep at night.
I couldn't agree with you more. And look, it's really a question of, you know, that wars are inflationary by their very nature, right? There's no question about that. So right there, it has to be bullish because we've got 3-4 wars going on at once, military industrial complex. They're buying stuff. They're just writing, you know, printing up money and buying it. And you know, that's just the way it works. And the other thing is undermine confidence in the government, right? And that is another thing that really, really makes precious metals go up, the lack of confidence in the underlying system.
I could wish that people had less confidence in the government. They might be more careful about what they voted for. There's a famous libertarian from Hawaii named Bill Danks who used to say that people should have to pay taxes on their birthdays, and they should have to go in person to an IRS office where there would be a bunch of tables for the different government departments and programs. And you'd have to pay in person on your birthday in $1 bills. So you go over to the education department and shell out $1 bills for an hour. And then you go to the war department. And we used to call it the war department, right? And shell out your bills, you know. And after that, maybe people would think a little more carefully about what tax increases they voted for, what programs they thought were such great ideas.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. Like, well, you know, half the country doesn't even vote for the president anymore. You know, a lot of dead people do, but
especially in Chicago. But you know, there's something there. I remember in economics, maybe not 101, but somewhere in there, they talked about rational ignorance, and people complain about how these you know, benighted, uneducated people will spend more time choosing a VCR. Back in the day, we chose VCRs. If the audience knows what I'm talking about, you know. Okay, so. They spend more time choosing their new phone, let's say today, than choosing the school for their kids or researching the educational opportunities for their children. What could possibly be more important? What could possibly be more distorted? But the fact is, they're already taking your tax monies to pay for the public school. And you live in a public school district that tells you where you're going to send your kids. So you have very little choice or agency in this decision, whereas your VCR or your phone is completely up to you. So it actually is rational to allocate your time, resources to the decision that you can control and go later on the ones that, you know, you're a helpless victim of the system of. So, I actually have some sympathy for the average Joe out there. People call me arrogant and elitist or whatever. And okay, you know, maybe I don't suffer from weak self-esteem, but I have a great deal of sympathy for the average person out there. You take their agency away, you put them in this inhuman system that denies their personhood and the choices they can make. And so they go on mental strike. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, the ultimate rebellion, right? The ultimate rebellion. It's kind of sad commentary on things that's that's your choice. But yeah, it's kind of like the AA credo, you know, let me control the things that I can, accept the things that I can't, and grant me the wisdom to know the difference. And maybe they have the wisdom to know there's nothing you can do about it anyway. So let me worry about, now it would be which phone to buy or what tablet to get, right?
We seem to keep getting philosophical. We talk about ideas and economics and philosophy, but there's something really important here. Because sometimes you look at the news and you look at what people are doing, and it's like, how can people be so stupid? Like, just like, what is wrong with you people? But at the end of the day, reality does matter, right? You know, and it's sort of like the voting machine versus weighing machine. Markets in the short term are voting machines. You get meme stocks and, you know, just insanely stupid investment ideas. And they get a lot of money, right? And then in the long term, it's a weighing machine because reality does matter. And if your meme stock was bankrupt, it doesn't matter if the price went 10x in the market, it's still bankrupt, right? You know, so you look at it's tempting to look down your nose at the dumb masses. They don't know what they're doing. They're ignorant, uneducated, making bad choices. But in the context of reality mattering, a prime example of this right now is why the Biden team. And by the way, I'm not a Republican dishing on Biden. I was critical of Trump as well. I'm a libertarian. But it's interesting to me how the Biden team keeps pulling its hair out, that Biden doesn't get any credit for the wonderful Bidenomics and the wonderful economic strength we're seeing. And like, they don't get it. They're reading GDP reports and all these numbers massaged by their bureaucracy, and they're saying everything's great. But in the reality, you know, the average person out there is experiencing the reality. Now, very recently, the latest consumer surveys and things have shown an uptick. But until now, I think this disconnect is exactly what we're talking about. The powers that be, they don't, you know, rub shoulders on the street with the average Joe out there. And they don't understand why the average Joe in mass is not happier with their choices. Well, guess what? Reality does matter. And so long-term weighing machine, the wisdom of masses is a real thing, actually. You know, sometimes as dumb as they seem in the short term, over the long term, I do believe in people power. As arrogant as I'm often seen, I do think there is something to that.
I totally agree with you. Could not agree with you more. Hey, well, we are kind of done here, but appreciate you coming on as always, Lobo. Make sure you go to his site, independentspeculator.com, and the link is in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Question for Lobo and myself. Shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. Hey, we'll talk to you again soon. It's going to be an interesting year, that's for sure.
That's for sure. What I'm not sure of is if it'll be you next time or a robot that replaces you. We'll see.
Yeah, well, until they can reproduce this face, we'll just have to stay on video Zoom calls, right?
All righty. Take care, brother. Be well, audience.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.